University of Iowa, Iowa Flood Center. We are fortunate enough today to have them here telling us about their work, and I'm sure they're going to include some of what you're going to do in the Turkey River watershed, as well as what's going on throughout the state with your program. And it's such a pleasure to have them here. We're honored that they made the trip up today. So Larry Weber from the Iowa Flood Center is actually going to do most of the introductions. I'm just going to introduce him and let him tell you who he is and move forward.
Thank you, Laura. Appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity to come up here and talk today. I want to describe to you a little bit about our program as well as this kickoff meeting that we're having today is on a project that we're involved in that's funded by Housing and Urban Development, and it's an Iowa Watershed project. I want to give you just a little bit of an introduction to what we'll be talking about today. We'll talk about that project, the background of it, where it came from, a little bit more about IIHR and the Iowa Flood Center so that you have some sense for who we are, the phase one and phase two of the project timeline, some data needs that we have, project deliverables that we expect as outcomes from this project, and then we've had information this morning in terms of presentations of the local watershed program. So,
Larry?
Yes.
Microphone, right?
Okay. Would you like the mic? I'll try not to scream into this thing so that we're not too loud here. Anyway, IIHR is a research organization at the University of Iowa. It began in 1919, so we'll be coming up on 100 years of research that's related to hydrology, hydraulics, fluid mechanics. Basically, all things fluid is really our interest level. We are a program within the University of Iowa affiliated with the College of Engineering. We have a graduate student body that does a lot of our research. This last year we had about 105 graduate students all working on projects that were fluids related. We have, in addition to that, about 48 PhD level research staff and another about 50 professional scientific staff. So our group is over 200 strong now, all working in this broad area of hydraulics, hydrology, and fluid mechanics. And different than most of the rest of the university campus, we're what is called a soft money institution. So all of our funding for our staff and graduate students all comes from external grants and contracts. So we work very hard to solicit funding, write grant proposals, attract money to the institute, and use that to support our program. Last year, our funding level was just short of $21 million. To give you some sense for the level of research that we do there. It ranges from biofluid mechanics, looking at airflow into and out of the lung, blood flow through heart valves. We create the only computational fluid dynamics code that the Navy uses to design its high-speed surface combatants. That's called CFD Ship Iowa. So we have a long-standing research funding from the Navy. We do a fair amount of work out in the Columbian Snake River Basin looking at the hydraulics, hydrology, and fluid mechanics associated with water flow into and out of main stem hydropower dams in the Columbia River Basin, in particular Salmon Passage there. So that expertise in hydrology and hydraulics led to the formation of the Iowa Flood Center, which was formed after the 2008 flood and the 2009 General Assembly. And that really began as a conversation with corridor legislators from Iowa City and Cedar Rapids who came to IIHR in the fall of 2008 after the flood and had really good questions, really strong technical questions. They were trying to understand really the physics and the genesis of the 2008 flood, knowing that they would be facing a number of legislative proposals to the General Assembly in 2009. So really looking for the expertise. They came and they spent the better part of several hours chatting with us. We described some of the work that we were already doing to assess the 2008 flood, and that led to the General Assembly requesting a proposal from the University of Iowa to create and maintain a state-funded flood center. And so Vitek Krajewski and myself were the co-writers or co-founders of the Iowa Flood Center, and I believe Vitek was just up in the watershed last week, meeting with a broader group of agencies as well, describing some of the work. So that's really how the Iowa Flood Center was formed. I have a few colleagues with me today. Sarah Scusi, who's sitting at the kind of registration table. Sarah is a staff person who is very active and involved in this Iowa Watersheds project. She's the person that's coordinating all of these kickoff meetings and follow-up public meetings that we'll have, working closely with the watershed groups to convey information back and forth in the Flood Center. Nick Thomas, who's here, he is a PhD student that's working on our project. He's from Minnesota, graduated from the University of Minnesota, joined us about 2 years ago, finished his master's degree up the past year, and is the graduate student that will be focused on the Turkey River watershed. And then Joe Volcom, who splits his time with the Center for Global and Regional Environmental Research and the Iowa Flood Center, as well as being a state senator representing the Iowa City area in the middle. So that's our team that's with us today. You might have seen some of the information that we have at the Iowa Flood Center is consolidated and presented through what's called the Iowa Flood Information System. It's an information system that has collected all of the river quantity data, USGS cooperative stream gauge information, as well as about 100 Iowa Flood Center grip sensors that we've installed throughout the state. That information, along with precipitation products that we generate at the Flood Center from the 7 NextRad radar that overlook Iowa. So we have rainfall data as it's happening, shown in the context of a watershed. I believe there we selected, probably got Iowa River and Iowa City. Once you select that community, the watershed is delineated. All the stream gauges are shown upstream. You can simply move your cursor around, select those various stream gauges, and look to see what's happening hydrologically at those various sites. The Flood Center, real interest in the work that we've been doing is to, one, increase the resiliency of Iowa communities to future flooding. We've done that by creating a number of community-based flood inundation maps that are available online. We're doing that through increased forecasting systems like in IFAS here, as well as involved in a statewide floodplain mapping project that's going to remap the entire state with updated FEMA work map products that will be submitted to FEMA, and then depending on funding levels in FEMA, hopefully gone through the QAQC process and public comment process so that they will become the certified floodplain maps for Iowa. So we're involved in that project. That began about 2 years ago. We hope to be finishing that up in about 3 years, so remapping the entire state in 5 years. So those are some of the activities that we're working on. The Flood Center is funded by a state of Iowa funds. We were moved from one-year money for the first 3 years. This last session, we were moved into the general fund. So now we have $1.5 million in the general fund. So we have a little more stability in our program and hoping that we can continue doing the good work that serves all of Iowa. Oftentimes when we're traveling around, people ask, what is the cost to get this information? And we say that, generally speaking, it costs you about 42 cents per person per year. That's the level of funding that we receive for the Flood Center. So if you haven't had a chance to in the past, please visit our website at iowafloodcenter.org if you want to look at this information. The part of the Flood Center work that I'm most excited about is really thinking about resiliency. And I'll describe that. That really comes to play in 4 different HUD projects. I wanted to give folks an overview of these projects because they are somewhat interrelated. They did come from Housing and Urban Development funds. There were some supplemental funds that were made available by HUD late in 2010. The state of Iowa competed for these supplemental funds with other states that were receiving disaster relief funding from 2008. And the state of Iowa was fortunate enough to receive the largest amount of any state. $312 million remained available in the supplemental funding program. Iowa was initially awarded $84 million. Later, that was increased to $92 million. So we were really able to take advantage or benefit from those funds more than any other state. The projects that have come out of that, in addition to a number of buyout projects, a number of infrastructural improvement projects, which are, of course, very, very important, there was $10 million that was assigned to these 4 projects. three projects. The fourth project was funded also with HUD funding, but through Reeville, Iowa. So the first one is the agricultural drainage study from 2008 and subsequent funding. We've heard the question asked many, many times in probably many different ways, but the basic question is, what is the impact of agricultural drainage on flooding? And we hear two very distinct responses to that, sometimes very community-based, depending on which community you belong to. We have some people that say that agricultural drainage reduces the impact of flooding. Other people have said that it is the sole and only cause of flooding in Iowa. And clearly, neither one of those are exactly true. There's probably some truth in both camps, but there's a lot of information in between those areas. So we were asked by the Rebuild Iowa office to lead a study to understand better the impacts of agricultural drainage on flooding in Iowa. We knew that politically it probably wouldn't make great sense for us to do that alone, as sometimes in the University of Iowa we're sort of seen as the Republic of Eastern Iowa, or this little group in Iowa City that is less interested in the agricultural economy. Of course, folks in Iowa State may be perceived differently as well. So we teamed up with researchers over at Iowa State. It's a great partnership. Faculty and researchers that we work very closely with coming together to study this agricultural drainage project. I think the modeling that we bring to the table is one of a kind, and from a technology perspective, far more advanced than work that they had available. The amount of field data and expertise that they have in agricultural drainage clearly surpasses anything that we have at University of Iowa, so it's a real good partnership there. Now, from the supplemental funds, the three projects that were funded, the Iowa Watershed Project, again, total funding for all three of these was $10 million. $8.8 million was allocated to the Iowa Watershed Project. The creation of watershed management authorities in Iowa, $800,000 was allocated to that program. The Turkey River Watershed Management Authority, the group that came together here to form that group, received a phase one funding from the WMA project. Other programs that received funding there were Catfish Creek in Dubuque, Indian Creek in Cedar Rapids, Squaw Creek in Ames, the upper Cedar River Basin, such as Charles City and up, and the Middle Raccoon River watershed. So those were the six projects that were funded. Each received up to $30,000 of assistance to create a 28E Watershed Management Authority. Again, there's one that's being created here in the Turkey River. And then the phase two of that project will be to compete for around $550,000, maybe $600,000 of remaining funds that will be for planning assistance. And that would be to create comprehensive watershed plans in those watersheds. I believe the anticipated number of awards will be about six in the phase two. So, or excuse me, three in the phase two. Six were funded in phase one, probably three in phase two to compete for those planning assistance dollars. And then the final component of the HUD project was funding $400K for education and outreach. And that portion of the funding has been jointly, that project is joint between Iowa Department of Natural Resources and Iowa State Agricultural Extension Service. So again, one other key point here is that the monies must be used to benefit the 85 presidentially declared disaster counties. So that was a stipulation of the project. The Watershed Project, this is why we're here today. I'm going to talk to you more about that. The Watershed Project, again, it began as a conversation shortly after Iowa was made aware that the supplemental funds were coming to Iowa. I received a call from folks in Des Moines, and they were sort of thanking us for our involvement in helping to bring these dollars to the state. The comment that HUD had made at the time of the announcement was that Iowa received the most funding of these supplemental funds because of the innovation that was shown during recovery. And the two elements that were pointed out, amongst others, were the creation of the Rebuild Iowa office and the establishment of the Iowa Flood Center. So they called and had a little bit of a thank you and said, well, in small part, you were responsible for this. And my response, of course, was, if there's an interest in additional innovation, we would have some ideas in terms of things that we thought were important to Iowa. And when asked to expand upon that, my response was that in addition to buying out homes and fixing levees and rebuilding infrastructure, we need to start to address the issue of how do we work on private lands in the watershed for public good. That's been a real challenge in Iowa because so much of the land is privately owned. So much of the damages have been, in addition to distributing across these agricultural lands, but have been focused in large urban areas. So how can we get these two somewhat diverse communities to work together? And we believe that we now have modeling technologies available to start to be able to model the hydrology of the land surface and understand better how we can work across this common watershed area for the good of all. Our specific project goals here are first to maximize the soil water holding capacity during heavy precipitation, and how much, how can we improve the infiltration capacity at the land surface itself, minimize severe scour erosion and sand deposition, manage runoff and uplands in undersaturated soil moisture conditions, and reduce and mitigate structural and non-structural damages during floods. This is, again, it remains true today. We're only 4 years after the 2008 flood. Since 08, we had the Lake Delhi Dam failure. In 2010, we had flooding throughout eastern Iowa in 2009. Of course, last year was a hallmark year on the Missouri River, where they were at flood stage for a record number of days. So we just see that this continues to go on. The phase one of this project is we started the project in January of this year. We started that by distributing a request for information, and the request was very simple. The response was relatively short. We wanted to find the watersheds in Iowa that would be willing to work with us to engage with Iowa Flood Center and IIHR researchers to better understand watershed processes in Iowa. Our selection process was we were looking for watersheds that were large, but not larger than a Huckade. That's a pretty large watershed for us to be working in. The map to the right shows the Huckades in Iowa. We didn't want to do anything any larger than that. We knew that vital to all of this would be community engagement, so we wanted to work with watersheds that either were creating 20 ADs in the Watershed Management Authority, had already established them, or through other vehicles had very active groups in the watershed. And the Turkey River was one of the respondents that we received, and it was one of a very long list of very good proposals, and clearly one of the better proposals because we did move it forward as a funded watershed. In phase one, we will be doing hydrologic model development and assessment, and I won't go into all the details. There are probably some technical folks here that would be quite interested in knowing more and more about hydrologic modeling, but I think there's a larger group of people here that probably don't care. In an earlier meeting that we had last week in Ottumwa, I shared with the staff on the way home that I put twice too many slides in there about modeling. I put two in, so I cut it back to one. So you can be probably thankful for that. Once we've completed this hydrologic assessment of the Huckade, we're really looking for areas that have high runoff production. Where are the areas within the watershed that we believe we can increase infiltration and we can pull more water back? And then we're going to go to those areas, and that's where we're going to do the phase two project for. If we take the $8.8 million and we've selected four watersheds and we divide that by four and we spread, the $2.2 million across ubiquitously across those watersheds, our ability to make enough change and to make a big enough impact to understand the benefit will be too small and too diverse that we really won't be able to create much of a signature there. So our intent is we originally planned to only select three watersheds to do the assessment in. We had four proposals that we just couldn't say no to, so we picked four. Our plan is to only build projects in two or three of those selected four watersheds. So it's still a competition. I know that we've gotten some response from people in the watershed that say, why don't you folks just step aside, write the check to us. We've got this whole long list of projects that are all queued up and ready to go. We don't need your hydrologic assessment. We know where the projects need to be built. And there's a lot of validity to that. But if we really want to try to build a program and build decision-making for the state of Iowa that allows us the knowledge and understanding to move these watershed projects not just from four watersheds, but statewide, we need to do this assessment. We need to learn more about our watersheds and how they work. And that requires the hydrologic assessment first, the build projects second. Once the projects are built, we'll monitor them throughout the remainder of our project period, and then we use these mathematical models to scale up to the larger scale from the HUC 8 back up to the HUC 12, and then statewide. So here are the watersheds that we have received responses from. The Turkey River, the Upper Cedar, we have Catfish Creek in Dubuque, Indian Creek in Cedar Rapids, the Middle South Raccoon, west of Des Moines, 4 Mile Creek, just north of Des Moines, Soap and Chequess Creeks in southern Iowa, and then the upper portion of the Lower Iowa watershed and the English River watersheds, just really in our backyard in Iowa City. And from those, we made our selection to the four, the Turkey, the Upper Cedar, the Middle Raccoon, and Soap and Chequess Creeks. And so politically, of course, that was one of the most unpopular decisions locally, because we didn't pick the watersheds that were closest to our home and the watersheds that we do a lot of work in. But the strength of the other four proposals was just absolutely so strong and impressive. The amount of community involvement that they were able to show in writing the proposal. And I would say that most particularly was true for the Turkey River effort. With all the work that's going on here in the Turkey River, we were very impressed with the proposal and really quite excited about working with the group. Now, I mentioned that the purpose, really the purpose, is not necessarily to solve the flooding issue in the four watersheds that we're going to work in, but rather develop a plan for implementation for the long term so that we can work towards a solution. We will not find a solution in 4 or 5 years, but we want to work towards a solution, and we want to use this project as the foundation project for the entire state of Iowa. And you'll notice here that the four watersheds that we selected, they really do cover different geologic forms in Iowa, different land forms in Iowa, and they'll really be quite different in terms of the land use and the modeling as well. And I forget, this morning Robin was here, and she mentioned that in the work that she was doing in West Union, that she really didn't have all the answers to the problems that, and all the answers to every question that people were asking. I would say the same thing is true for this project in hydrologic assessment, and even more so for the Turkey River. This will be, without question, the hardest project that we do because of the sinkholes, the karst topology, everything that's going on in the subsurface. This will challenge our modelers and models differently than all the other models that we have, and we're up to the challenge. So we're gonna develop models. Not only do we do modeling, but rather than just the application of standard mathematical models that exist for watersheds, we do a lot of research and we do a lot of co-development of models. So I think from a scientific perspective, we'll end up with technologies that will be greatly enhanced based on the work that we do here in the Turkey River Basin. The model that we're going to be using, the kind of the backbone model, we'll be using multiple models, some at a little higher level, some to get some quick assessment, give us some guidance in terms of where to go. But the backbone model that we'll use is called Hydrogeosphere. It's a fully physically based integrated surface subsurface model that will rely on NEXRAD estimates of precipitation, and it will physically partition the water that lands onto the land surface between water that infiltrates into the ground, including the deep groundwater, water that runs off based on various soil types and land uses, and we'll be able to determine basically on about a 10-foot by 10-foot area the amount of water that goes into the soil there, the amount of water that comes running off, and the amount of water that ends up in every small depressional area, every small waterway, every small stream, every small river, all the way up to the main stem of the Turkey. So we will know the water flow everywhere all the time. So that's a pretty impressive physics-based model. Yes?
I would just like to know, are you assuming corn and beans into the future?
Well, we have the opportunity then, because this is a mathematical model, we can look at different, what we call reference conditions. We can look at the way the land use is used today, we can look at past land uses, or we can look at future land uses. So one of the elements that we would like to consider are what other non-structural methods are there. We're not an advocate or proponent for saying we have to return all of our agricultural lands back to deep rooted prairie grasses, but there are some areas where we have high slopes, where we have the ability with the specific soils to do infiltration practices that we'll probably propose that. So we have this ability to put the mosaic of land use in the future how you might like it, how somebody over here might like it, how a third person might like it, and then mathematically be able to compare the impacts in terms of stream flow and runoff for different storm events that those land uses have. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
So this is just sort of a cartoonish conceptual model of how the model works. We're already developing, it's been working for a while and starting to pull the model together. These are not easy models to build. They're not easy models to run. So we have to build these models over a period of several months. We probably won't be back here with results of the models until early next year. Therefore, we'll be using some lighter weight models over the top of this kind of detailed model, again, to do some early assessment. That's probably a talk for later to talk more about the modeling. Once we start building it up the Turkey River, then we really need people locally here to look at the model, assess it, work with us on it, and tell us, yeah, that does make sense. That is, you know, we'll model events that have occurred, actual rainfall events. We can go back to 2008, pick up storm events that have passed over the Turkey River, apply those to the model, compare those to the USGS stream gauge information to see how well we match the stream flows. But also be wanting to get individual landowners involved to find out, is this what they saw? I mean, did they see this level of inundation on their land in particular areas? So there'll be a lot of work to be done there. It's interesting in that, you know, we build this just shows a small watershed. Again, to give you some ideas that we build these up from the land surface up in a great amount of detail. Now, in terms of identifying locations, we'll be working, again, to assess at the Huckade, at the large Turkey River watershed scale, and then to go from there, we're going to look at implementation into Huck-12s. So our intent, I want to keep reminding people of this, is that not that we'll spend the money uniformly across all four watersheds, but select two, perhaps three, of these first watersheds that we're going to go in and do our implementation at one or two Huck-12s in those watersheds. We've got to do it at a small enough scale to do it focused well enough that we can get a measurable outcome rather than sort of uniformly distributing it. So this project is not one like, you know, oftentimes as we get federal funding that comes to Iowa, you know, there are different criteria in terms of how that's spatially distributed. The sign-up may just be on first-come, first-served basis. We are going to be looking at watersheds, and from this, most certainly, of the Huck-12s in the Turkey River, there will be many candidate watersheds. And ultimately, the decision of whether to build or not to build is going to come to whether we have willingness of private landowners to participate. Can't say it any more simply than that. We've got to have folks that want to work with us in building these projects. Another question that comes up all the time, so I'll try to, you know, beat you to the punch there, is what's the cost share arrangement on this project? And based on the source of funding, there is no cost share requirement. We would like to work with the Turkey River Watershed Management Authority to find out what works best for you. What is the right opportunity here in the Turkey River? Different watersheds may want to do this differently. The phase one money, remember, comes directly to us for the hydrologic assessment. The phase two funding will go directly to the Watershed Management Authority, basically. So we won't touch those monies. We'll work with the Watershed Management Authority to find those watersheds that make the most sense to do the work in, but it'll have to be from the local community here to decide who the willing landowners are. But all those different color schemes show the different Huck-12s in the watershed, so there's a lot to pick from. I think there'll be a lot of very good candidate watersheds. Even at the larger Huck-8 scale, when someone asked me if I had a preference of going into the announcement of the project, my response to that is and remains today that all watersheds in Iowa are good watersheds to work in. There's a lot of opportunity in Iowa to make improvements in terms of flood runoff. So the phase two project, of course, the different project types, we'll be looking at projects that, you know, the local watershed group feels are most appropriate for the watersheds here. They may be ponds, they may be farm ponds that could be active or passive. You might understand that in a lot of pond building, there is an outlet pipe that basically determines the permanent pool elevation. And then what's left between the outlet pipe height and the emergency spillway is the amount of volume that's available for flood storage. Because we are focused on flood mitigation, our preference would be to keep that outlet pipe lower rather than higher. But in terms of encouraging landowner interest in having ponds, you know, of course, there's a balance in wanting to keep that higher. We appreciate that. We'd be happy to work with folks on that. So we'll be looking at ponds. Those could be active or passive. Most ponds that are built in Iowa are passive ponds. They have a pipe and they have an emergency spillway. There's no active control of the water outside or out of the pond. We do have an interest in developing at least one of our application projects to include active release of water, where we would develop a network of systems that says, you know, if we have carrying capacity in the channel downstream, let's keep the water moving. There's no reason to hold it back into watersheds. You know, if we get into a 2008 or a 93 sequence or cycle where we get rainfall upon rainfall upon rainfall, then holding water back sometimes can result in worse flooding, again, based on the combination of rainfall and how water comes out of the basin. So at least one of these projects that we'll do in Iowa, we'd like to have an active control system where we're monitoring pond levels real-time and stream levels downstream real-time and having remote control of a gated outlet structure to keep water moving. Buffer strip installation enhancement, advanced tile drainage, and there's some work that's being done in the state of Iowa now looking at stop log gated control subsurface drainage, using the subsurface itself as a storage media. That's an opportunity working with progressive landowners. Urban and rural infiltration practices, and then of course floodplain easement acquisition. It's also worth noting from a funding perspective that all of our monies are one-time monies, so we can't enter into an agreement that results in recurrent payments to landowners. So we can do one-time payments, we can do incentive payments to get landowner involvement, but we can't do recurrent contract payments like we would or you could receive in a CRP type program. We can't do that. And then again, lastly, I just reiterate here, engagement of the watershed authority here and private landowners will be vital to the success of the project. And, you know, quite clearly, very influential in terms of where we will select the projects, whether there'll be a project in the Turkey River or not will be dependent on the interests and willingness of landowners to work with us. So timeline, where are we at? It's a long project, like all these things, to build models, to actually build projects, and to see the benefit of those projects. It'll be a long period. Our work begins this month, so we're started. We're kicking off the four meetings. Last week we were in Atoma. Today we're here. Friday we're in Redfield, Iowa, just west of Des Moines. And next Wednesday we'll be up in Charles City meeting with folks in the Upper Cedar. So we're out in front of the communities. We're going to be presenting the basic information and answering questions. We're trying to find out what data exists out there. There have been a lot of studies. We've heard of many of those this morning with some of the technical folks, and we need to try to make those connections and find that information if possible. We'll be back in the fall. We intend to be out in the watershed doing formal-type meetings about every quarter or once a season. We will likely be in the watershed much more often than that, coming up here to meet with individuals, agencies, so Conservation Service, NRCS, you know, various groups here on a smaller, more frequent basis. We'll be back in the fall and winter. We'll give you a little update, talk a little bit more about modeling, what we can do, what we can't do in the fall and the winter. Probably just after the first of the year, we'll come back up to discuss some initial findings of the hydrologic modeling, start to work on community and landowner engagement throughout that period. In the spring and ongoing, again, we'll be meeting quarterly. The fall of 2013, we hope to be finished and to complete and present a hydrologic assessment and start to identify those HEF-12s. In about 16 or 18 months, we're hoping that we're really finding those HEF-12s up in Morgan. And then we'll finish up the hydrologic assessment report, which will be a guiding document for the watershed in terms of prioritization of where the folks in the watershed should be working, should give you good technical information, should be of a great value and asset in terms of writing grants to other state and federal programs. Having this assessment complete, I think, will increase the competitiveness to search for and solicit other dollars in the future. The phase two portion of the project, that will begin really summer and fall of next year in 2013. We'll start to explore these project locations, commence the project design. The project's designs will be done locally. Again, the phase two part of the project is not for us to design every structure or every project that will be built, but really for the Watershed Management Authority to work with the people that worked with in the past to build projects and to design those projects. Summer 2014 and 2015, we anticipate most of the project construction. Again, there's issues with permitting, and we've got to make sure that we get permitting well underway early, make sure that that all goes forward. And then in the following years, we'll do some monitoring and assessment, and then we'll wrap this whole thing up in the fall of, summer and fall of 2017. So it's 5 years out. Time goes by fast. We've had this project was announced about 16 months ago. The uniqueness of the project led to some very interesting contractual issues with HUD, so it took us a little while to work through that. That period went by fast. The next 5 years will go by fast as well.
When will you select the watersheds of those four, or will all four of them have projects done?
So we have the four selected. We're doing the hydrologic assessment, and then, you know, come summer and fall of next year, we want to be finding out from the Turkey River what of the 12s that we've assessed. So we'll tell you what we see, and we want to hear back from the group here. You know, does that make sense hydrologically? And then secondly, is there willingness of landowners in that 12 to work with us? Now, as I said, because of the number of options in the Turkey River in particular, you know, I would imagine that we'll come back and say, boy, you know, it makes sense for us to work in any one of these six or eight watersheds. Now, let's figure out from a landownership perspective where we have the best opportunity to really move forward there. And then we'll be doing the same activity in the other four watersheds. So we're going to try to bring all of that information together at about the same time. All of our modeling being completed at about the same time. All these public meetings going on at the same time. And then it'll be kind of left to us, and we have a small kind of administrative team that has representation across state and federal agencies in Iowa that was involved in the selection of the four watersheds. We'll work with them to say, well, geez, you know, here we have this opportunity in Turkey. How does that compare with an opportunity that we have in Sheep West Creek? Because there'll be two different opportunities to move forward. So that's how we'll move forward. You know, we're working on just early information gathering. Of course, there's a lot that's available by way of layers. A lot of it is held with NRCS and other agencies. Turkey River, of course, is complex because it crosses a number of county boundaries. It's a large watershed. It'll be very difficult to get because of the sinkholes and the interesting surface water groundwater interactions. There are 53 HUC 12s in the Turkey River watershed, so again, there's a lot of opportunity for different watersheds. At least based on this information, again, it depends on when you pull the data. These can be off by a percent or two, but about 91% private land ownership, 56% in row crop, 25% in pasture, 16% in forested lands, 2% developed and 1% other. The information, again, as we see it, we have access to all of the DNR, the EPA data one way or another, whether we have point access to it or at least cooperative access to the data. We have access to most of the data. There may be other information that comes from local water treatment, wastewater treatment facilities that we're not aware of that we'll be working with folks on, other private well and private landowner data as well. We are aware of some of the studies that have gone on. We got much more information this morning, so we have a lot of additional reading to do after this meeting today. We'll again be working with NRCS and DNR and others to find out more about the projects that are underway or are already completed and integrating that into our studies. So again, our deliverables from phase one will be the interaction that we'll have with the community here, the hydrologic model development. The model, which is a mathematical model, we believe will last a long time. So once we've completed this work in 2 years, we really believe that as this watershed goes forward in terms of implementation, we'll continue to add those projects as they're developed into the model so that we can get quantified, measurable responses in terms of what's being built, and then also assessment of future conditions. I'll just give you one example from our meeting from last week. We were down in southern Iowa, meeting in Ottumwa, and touring through the Silk and Sheepwest Creek watersheds. It was a very interesting project meeting for us. We were there for 2 days, basically, an afternoon and the following day. It's a very watershed-centric, landowner-centric project that's been underway there for between 25 and 30 years. Their watershed assessment report that they use as their guiding document was published in 1988, and it listed 150 different projects, mostly farm ponds and pond-type projects, but there are some wetlands as well. 150 projects were listed in that 1988 report. I think they told us that 131 of those projects have been complete. And the only assessment that's been done, from my perspective, which was very interesting, was very landowner-centric. So we talked to a number of landowners, most of them farmers, and they would say, you know, before these projects were built, we'd get a 4-inch rain, and I'd have 6 feet of water on my floodplain, and now when we get a 4-inch rain, you know, the water's 3 feet below coming out of bank. You know, so we get a lot of information like that. There's no stream gauging down there. So what we'll be doing is we'll build a hydrologic model of the entire watershed, and we'll build it with and without these 131 projects included. Then we'll put rainfall events that have happened. They had a lot of intense rainfall in 2011. We'll model that with those projects installed. They did get some high watermark information from last year. They were very active about going out and collecting that data. We'll compare the model to see how well our model compares to the high watermark data, and then we'll take all the projects out and we'll run the same rainfall through the model and see what the flows would have been in all those streams, all those waterways, to help quantify the exact benefit that they got. Now, they partnered, just one second, they partnered locally. They did a very strategic thing in their application, and that Soap Creek connected with a neighboring watershed, Sequest Creek, both of them, I believe, are at about the Hunt 10 scale. So they have one watershed, Sequest, that has very, very little that's been done. One watershed, Soap, that has had a lot of projects in it. And so there's an opportunity there for us to do some good peer assessment. One, for the model development. But two, again, we're approaching this as, you know, a 50-year project, not a 5-year project in Niagara State.
Is it possible for you to do the same thing in the Turkey watershed as far as forest reserve land that in Forest Reserve and also Conservation Reserve Program, CRP lands, and what that might have affected 2008 fund as far as maybe being more severe?
Yeah, absolutely. That's been something that we've had an interest in doing for a few years. That's a question that's come up repeatedly. We haven't had the type of project and the funding to be able to do that to this point, but that is very much our intention in this HUD Watershed project. What we'll do is we'll come up with kind of a menu of first simulations that we'll do, making changes large enough to make sure that we can see a response in the model. Looking at one landowner, one plot versus another plot, you know, clearly it's too far into the details, but, you know, what if we had 10% CRP and, of course, you know, applying that 10%, in the most applicable lands, you know, would be a really good example. 10 or 15%, I think, is a pretty good number. Doing those types of simulations. What if we take all the existing CRP back out of enrollment? What if we don't get any more CRP funds, you know, over the next decade? What would that do? We can do that kind of what if scenario. That's it. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. We have plenty of time. Yes, Kelly.
So you have four watersheds in four different landform regions. You're using one model. Are you going to try to set that model up so it will work in all four of them, or will you have to modify it for each one of those landform regions?
Yeah, so here's a good model. So we'll get into a detailed model. the basic premise of the model is it's a physically based model, but based on soil types and other parameters that we can do to make it applicable to that watershed, we're going to have to do that. We're going to have to validate the model with whatever data that we have. You know, up here we've got more data, much more complex data in terms of, you know, losing streams and other things that are going on up here. So, you know, I keep smiling when I say that because the challenge is so great. And I know that you know that, and other people probably don't appreciate just what a challenge it will be. But a mathematical model is just that. And what, you know, the way I like to think about it is we go into model creation and model development. So anything that we learn along the way, we incorporate into the model. So that's our best understanding of how this system works. And if we learn something new, we'll learn a lot of new things based on models of results that are correct. Okay, places where the model fails, we're going to have to learn why it's failed. And that means that we go into the watershed, we learn more about what's happening there, we learn about, you know, the mathematical description that's used in the model, and then we advance the model that way. So this is not easy. There's absolutely would be injustice for me to say that we're going to stand up here, we're going to come back in 18 months and tell you where every little drop of water goes because of the land surface and everything out there is just too complex. Yes?
Yes. Climate change and what goes on with that. So tell me a little bit how you are going to be moving forward with the climate change idea.
Yeah, so the question is on climate change. So, you know, again, the way this model works is that we have the ability, so we have the watershed defined. So just as the map showed, so if I go back to here. So here's the watershed. This just shows the rough elevation map. You know, we've all seen that before. You know, like we have that level of detail in the elevation information, we have the same level of detail in past precipitation events because we have all the NEXRAD data. So from NEXRAD, we have estimates of precipitation that happen and are distributed across that watershed and distributed over time. So we can use those precipitation events. So we can go back and look at 2008. We can go back to, I think it was 1991. There was a pretty good flood. In fact, I was a graduate student camped out in El Cader the night of that flood and left the campground at about 10:30, leaving behind, you know, about two dozen other graduate students that when I called in the morning to find out what they were doing, they'd actually been run out of there by the sheriff at about 2 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, so we can go back and simulate that. We can simulate those rainfall events. Now, if we know enough about climate change, which I'm not sure that any of us here know enough, but if we could say that we expect rainfall intensity over a 24-hour period to increase by 20% to 50%, we can take those storms and scale those up by 50% and see what happens then. So this is a situation that we can look at under a future climate scenario. If we want to say that, you know, maybe it's, we're going to have more episodic events. So we're going to have large events, but we're going to have periods of dry weather. We're going to have a large event, we're going to have periods of dry weather. We can do that as well because we'll be tracking soil moisture all the way across the space. So again, another data need that we have that, you know, quite honestly, we don't have enough real good soil moisture data out there, but we'll make do with what we have.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around, because we have enough people partnering that we want to work in the entire watershed, in the entire Turkey River watershed, and you're going to eventually concentrate down into some of those sub-watersheds, those hot 12s. But I'm trying to figure out, will you still learn something about the other areas and how much, so that if we want to take what you're modeling for us in one or three or whatever, however many hot 12s, and expand that into additional sub-watersheds, how much will we know from what you're doing?
Yeah, so that's the exact reason why we want to focus. We want to be able to go into a small enough watershed that we can make a large enough change. And so, again, because we've described this whole watershed, and our initial modeling will be of the entire watershed, and our initial hydrologic assessment is, what if we go and we put 131 projects in your watershed, like Silk Creek? That's a magic number. We'll distribute those projects in there. We'll see what the benefit is. But then ultimately, we're going to pick one location where we're going to do the construction. But you'll have a guiding document and a model and a technology that's available for all future work going forward. So how you want to use that plan, how you want to implement that through different funding opportunities, how you want to use this as sort of as the ability to say, our watershed is better prepared to more wisely use money from that particular program because of this assessment. We think that is going to be important, and that's why it's also good to have a partnership here with state and federal agencies, because as they see this coming together, we think that this level of technical and quantitative understanding is going to benefit the whole nation.
And then my second question was if that will include, I assume, the communities.
Oh, yeah, of course. So, yeah.
I know there are a lot of community representatives.
Yeah, and we were chatting about that a little bit too, and just in terms of what's happening at West Union. So how much of that kind of project can we incorporate into this model? In our sort of authorizing language, it just says urban and rural management practices, including infiltration practices and other things. So I think another challenge for us would be to go to West Union and say, you know, let's look at that particular project that they've got going on, $7.5 million or something. And can we model that? Can we simulate that? If we can, then how can we share that kind of practice with other communities? Now, again, at some point we're going to, you know, we're going to run out of opportunity to continue to create some scenarios in this first couple year period before we go to project construction. But you know, the model will be there, and we'll work actively as well to try to continue its existence and its development. Implementation of these projects are going on.
I noticed on this slide about the, where you want to acquire the data. You didn't have anything now about where you acquire the soil information, the data. Where do you want to get that?
Yeah, so again, you know, the first thing that we're going to use is just available databases that we have through NRCS and IDALS. We have a fair amount of soils information there. I don't imagine that we're going to have to go out and supplement that much. In terms of going out and getting additional information. At the level of modeling that we'll do, I think that'll be sufficient. Yeah, there's a long, long list. I mean, the amount of data resources that we have, again, based on our work that we're doing around the state, you know, we have good connections with the state and federal agencies, so anything that exists there, we have access to.
So how do you look at soil moisture?
Soil moisture is a tougher one. There's some remote sensing techniques. We have, through National Weather Service, some estimates of soil moisture across the state of Iowa.
That's only for the surface.
Of course it is. So, you know, that's a challenge. We also, in addition to establishing some sensor information, we've put out more than 100 water level sensors this year. We'll do additional monitoring with the HUD money that we have. So we have budgeted in there equipment for monitoring. We can use monitoring both for stream quantity information, stream water quality information. Soil moisture is an absolute must, so we'll have to get additional soil moisture. The hard thing about soil moisture is that just to get the Turkey River to monitor soil moisture in the four watersheds that we have, you know, we could go through a good portion of the modeling budget just in soil moisture. So, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to do the best that we can. We're not going to be able to, you know, predict every little seep and every little wet spot out there, or we won't have data that shows that. You know, we're going to try to do our modeling, make sure our modeling at least is guiding us in the right direction. And then when we see places that we're short, we're going to have to get more data.
But isn't that one of the most important things in your model?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I don't deny it. I mean, it's no, you know, but when we're looking at, in particular when we're looking at heavy precipitation. So, you know, we are flood central. So at this point, our primary purpose is to look under really intense rainfall situations. So soil moisture most definitely is a determining factor in partitioning the water at the land surface. But once we get, you know, above the infiltration capacity, you know, all that water is coming off the land. You know, so we're going to be looking at the heavier rainfall events. But soil moisture is important. Other questions?
When you get to the point of saying, here are some projects or some techniques that would work, what's the process going to be for deciding where the money gets spent and cost sharing and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so that's really going to be with the Watershed Management Authority. So we're going to be working with them. We're going to be coming up here. You know, the Watershed Management Authority is working as well. They're working hard in the final creation of 20AE. They'll be working on, I'm assuming, applying for phase two funding under that project for watershed planning assistance money. We'll be coming back and saying, again, we'll have this mosaic. What if we put 10% in the deep prairie? What if we put 131 ponds out there? What if we do X, Y, and Z? We've got to have landowners involved. We've got to find out. Again, if we find 6 to 8 Huck wells that we think would be the candidate Huck wells to move forward in, then we're going to have to do some targeting. We're going to have to, you know, not just wait for people to come to a meeting like this, but really target landowners in those 6 or 8 watersheds. And that's going to include folks that have the boots on the ground up here to go out and work with landowners. Could be some of those landowners that applied for emergency wetlands program funding a couple of years ago that didn't get funded. Could be other folks that are looking to develop lands and forest reserve and other programs where local NRCS and Farm Service Agency has information about unmet need in terms of projects. And, you know, we'd like to be able to partner these resources with that unmet need as well. So there's going to have to be a lot of local work, and that is going to have to happen with both community leaders as well as agency folks up here. Yes,
I'm just curious, have you guys had a chance to think about a couple of the watersheds that you mentioned have been MAs and will probably be competing for the phase two round? And I was just curious, you know, if Upper Cedar or Turkey River or the Raccoon were to get those planning dollars, how you guys might work together to integrate that, your assessment into the planning effort?
Well, I think the two come together very well. Now, that doesn't mean that the watersheds that we're working in will have any kind of special advantage for that second phase.
Right.
I don't really see that. I think our work is independent enough and valuable enough and stands on its own well enough. It's not a comprehensive plan, which is a different process, and I know that you're aware of that. But in terms of comprehensive planning, which is going to be more of that phase two funding on the WMA project, that starts to look at all sorts of things in terms of energy, sustainability, water, urbanization, much broader level of watershed planning than our little hydrologic assessment. And I doubt, in fact, I'm positive, that there's no comprehensive planning that's done that would include the kind of modeling that we're doing here. Most of the time, it's at a much higher level, a SWOT-type model, to get a kind of an overview assessment of what's happening in terms of land use and land change, but not at the level of detail that we're doing. So the two stand on their the two stand up on themselves. If a watershed, the ones that will be selected with the second phase planning assistance money, as well as a hydrologic assessment, I think they'll have two wonderful projects to help those watersheds go forward in further developing good watersheds for the next century or more.
Are any of the programs like this going on?
There's a lot of different programs going on. Of course, you know, we come into the watershed and we get reports back of a long, long list of various state and federal programs that are happening, a lot of private public partnership programs that are going on. I am not aware of any project that includes this level of detail of assessment as well as constructive projects. I'm not aware of anything like this in the state of Iowa. I'm not aware of anything like it in the Midwest. When we had proposed this project to folks in Des Moines, in the Regal Iowa office and the governor's office, they really liked it. That was a 20-minute phone discussion. They then did get funding approval from HUD, and in order to administratively start transferring the money, they said, well, can we write this up in about 2 pages? So that was the first writing that happened. So I wrote up a little 2-page description of the project. They sent it to HUD, and HUD said, no, wait a second, we can't fund this because we didn't know he actually wanted to build something. If you build something, that would be NRCS or Corps of Engineers. We didn't know that you wanted to do this upscaling. That sounds like science. That would be the National Science Foundation. We would love this project, but we can't fund it because it's precedent that it's set. So then we went through about a year-long process to kind of change the scope enough and further refine it enough that it fit within the authority that HUD has to provide funding. But all along, they said, we don't think we can do it. We love it. We want to figure out a way to support it. So administratively, again, I thought any of you that have dealt with FEMA struggles with that process. Now, working with HUD on this particular project, they saw the value in it. They worked hard to make it happen. It took a little while, but we got here. So I'm not aware of anything else like this.
It just seems unusual that all this money didn't go right to see around this. That's, I guess, my point of view is just given the population we actually heard down here that we didn't get up here. Grateful for it, but it just seems a little unusual.
Yeah, and so we really need to be in the upper part of the watershed for this kind of project. To work in Cedar Rapids, Indian Creek had submitted a proposal. They wrote a great proposal. They're getting organized. They're getting started. And I would say they're not quite as far along as you folks are on the Turkey River. But then we're focused on one little watershed that flows into Marion, and it'd be important to them, but it doesn't answer the Upper Cedar River question. That really is the part that impacts Cedar Rapids. So, we were much more drawn from a technical perspective to the Upper Cedar as a good project. The Turkey, again, because of its complex surface water, subsurface groundwater issue southern Iowa, Silver Chief Plus Creek, and then western Iowa, at least west of Des Moines, with the Middle Rock community being part of Des Moines involved. There was a fairly major drainage system over there. So that's the other reasons for that. But no, it didn't all end up in Cedar Rapids. Did you guys suffer just as much as most of Cedar Rapids did? Silk Creek. I mean, most of the state and federal agency folks that are here are aware of the work that had been going on in Silk Creek for 25 years. And it's a very grassroots-oriented group down there. It's private landowners. I came to the meeting at Silk Creek last week, and there were, you know, of the 30 people that attended that meeting, there were 5 people with a technical background, and the other 25 were farmers, private landowners that were there. Some had projects already built on their lands, and others didn't. And they followed on the second day with a watershed tour. When they had 2 school buses, they had 90 participants on the watershed tour going around seeing the projects that had been built. And it was, you know, about community members looking at the nice pond that someone had on their land, understanding the connection of that pond to their downstream property, understanding, you know, just who that person was in the community. So I think there it's a good example, maybe naive, but it's a good example of how you know, a small selection of projects there really developed into support from the larger watershed group. You know, when they started out, they proposed 150 projects. There were a lot of non-believers that saw the original program that came out in 1988. It took a couple people to move forward. One project that we visited was about a 20-acre pond, 20-acre surface area pond, real nice project. I believe the cost was around $230,000. There was local match, but it was through the Watershed Management Authority, not from the local landowner. So the local landowner didn't pay anything for that $230,000 20-acre pond. He didn't give up his land, so he gave up the land. And said, you know, it was grassland. And he said it was some of the best grassland. But for the 50-year storm, he had 1,750 cubic feet per second coming off of his land at that project for the 50-year storm. After they built the pond, it was down to 40 CFS. 1,750 down to 40. You know, that's benefit. That's real benefit. And you know, not that all those projects were that big, but when you look at, you know, that was on the larger end of it. When you put 131 of those out there, you know, the measurable benefit at the lower part of that watershed is significant.
Yes? I think those kind of statistics would be pretty important to program.
What will be, and again, this is my surprise, nobody has gone back and assessed that watershed. And that was one of the things that really drew us to it. So we're going, in this hydrologic assessment, we're going to be able to show folks there, as well as our other watersheds that we're working with, this is the kind of benefit that Silk Creek is seeing right now. When we take the Turkey River, the first thing that we'll do in the Turkey River is model the whole basin, and we're going to try to model some extreme events that we have good extreme gauge data for. And then we will, hypothetically, like Laurel did, go out and put 100 projects out there. And we're going to come back and show you this is the reduction of discharge in Elkhart with those 100 events for that particular storm. Then that's going to be a starting step. You know, that's going to be a first step in this path. And then we're going to try different practices, whether it be, you know, CRP-type implementations, floodplain easements, and other things. But the quantification of it, we hope, helps to raise the level of interest in landowners to participate. In the past, we haven't been able to quantify it as well. You know, Laurel's able to do that on a single project by project basis, but it's a little bit hard to see the timing of that at the larger watershed scale with the kind of more traditional approach.
Any
So I think, you know, I'd be happy to stick around and answer questions all afternoon. I'd be happy to stay here and have a discussion with individuals, but also want to cut it short, too, in case folks have places they need to go or you know, just get them.
I think that there's a lot of people that are a little bit confused, and we've heard this from some of the people in the room, so I just want to review it, and it isn't anything that, I mean, I might say it, and you still might be confused. So there are a lot of things going on in the Turkey River watershed. The Turkey River Watershed Alliance is a group of technical people that have been working over the last few years to gather information, including water quality information from 50 sites every month. And they include Salem Water District personnel, fisheries personnel from Iowa DNR, Brad, help me out, RC&D, Resource Conservation and Development personnel, DNR Fisheries, I think it's the Water and Geologic Survey Bureau, a lot of funding has come in to help with that effort to pay for those the analysis, including some private, Pheasants Forever. We even had some private donors that are really passionate about water quality in our streams and rivers. And the Alliance, the work that they're doing would also eventually, as they try to put conservation on the ground to improve water quality, would also help reduce flooding because there's a lot of overlap. So keep that as, that's kind of one silo. Then the Watershed Authority funding became available to help watersheds develop a broader partnership to include the cities in the discussion who had never been included. And so Clayton County, actually, we helped them submit an application for the Watershed Authority funding. And through that, we now have 35 entities that have signed on a 2080 agreement to work together to help reduce flooding and improve water quality. That's another silo. Okay, those are communities in the watershed, counties, the supervisors, and the Soma water districts in the watershed. I think it's 25 communities, five counties.
Yep.
And six soil and water conservation districts. And there could be still more because we have till the end of the month before we'll wrap that up. And that authority then will be, as was mentioned, applying for phase two funding to develop a plan for the entire Turkey River watershed. And then we have the third silo, and that is what the Iowa Flood Center is doing. And you just heard the description of that work. What's really wonderful is that all these silos are not exclusive of each other. They are all trying to share information and work back and forth. So those technical folks, and then the cities and the counties and the districts, and then the Flood Center will all share information. So even though the Flood Center, ultimately, they'll analyze the whole watershed, ultimately will only do some pilot projects in sub-watersheds in Hub 12 rather than the whole thing. Brad, work your magic and make this be the turkey. We're going to watch a look at a watershed. That's the whole point. That's why we're having so many meetings and trying to get so much information out there. We will work together across those silos for the benefit of everyone in the watershed. We will do that. And we will bring more partners in. So this will not end with just the people in the room. And that's us going back to our communities and talking to those people in our communities, those people that we work with, those people that we have influence over, and getting them to understand what's happening. If we're going to be a model watershed for the nation, we can choose that. The Turkey River Watershed is going to join together the entities in it, the producers, the communities, the leaders. We're going to join together as a model for the nation. We have to talk about it. We have to get it in the paper. We have to talk to our neighbors. We have to recruit other partners. And so we don't want those silos separate. And right now they aren't. We want it, but we want it to mix even more. And we want to not only take what the flood center figures out, we want to use that to launch the other activities throughout the watershed. So that'll be help us get started, but we're certainly not stopping with just one or two or three sub-watersheds. We want to take that information and launch so that the entire Truckee River watershed is the model. So that's the intent, and I hope, I'm so pleased that y'all came today, and I know this afternoon was not really, we weren't the hosts this afternoon, so I'm thankful that you let me speak for a few minutes. And I hope that you all came away with something you didn't know before and that you're able to come to the next meeting, and we'll try to make it worth everyone's effort at every meeting. The Truckee River Watershed Authority folks are going to be meeting again next Thursday, and they'll see all the names of who signed on in that authority. They'll be right there and start working on their bylaws. And so that is moving right along at the speed of light. And the Alliance continues to monitor, and you can see what's happening, what the water quality results are like at turkeyriver.org. Anybody can go in there and you can sign up for that automatic information online and gets notices about what's happening in the watershed. And if you want, anybody needs assistance or wants to learn more that you didn't hear today, please feel free to contact any of us. So, thank you very much.